Today's program has been brought to you by Tabard Inn, New American Cuisine in one of Washington, D.C.'s oldest hotels, located in DuPont Circle. For more information, visit TabardInn.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit HeritageRadioNetwork.org for thousands more.
Hi, you're listening to High Grease on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Nicole Taylor. Today we'll be talking Dr. MLK Day 2013 and, of course, President Obama's inauguration. Joining us in the studio on this historic day, I am just so honored to have Karen Washington, the famed urban gardener and activist, and Therese Nelson, Johnson & Wales trained chef and founder of BlackCulinaryHistory.com. Ladies, welcome to Hot Grease.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
I am so happy. I was like, you know what? I have to have Karen in the studio on this historic day. And both of you guys are powerhouses. You can feel like all the power and the energy in the room.
I'm sweating.
You're sweating? It is kind of hot in here. So look, y'all, speaking of sweating and good food, did you see Soul Food Junkies?
Definitely.
I saw it. Powerful.
Amazing work.
Incredible.
Was it 4 years in the making?
But yeah.
Just to have it kind of boil down to all the little pieces you've seen to just this one succinct hour of real talk.
What I found amazing, I don't know if you followed any of the commentary on Facebook, Karen. Did you follow any of the commentary? People were talking about Soul Food Junkies.
They were inspired. They were talking about, you know, they can remember back in the day, relation to their family, you know, eating all that good food and a celebration. But I think what was so profound is that here was a black brother breaking it down and the people that were talking were black scholars.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so you had to give a thumbs up for that sort of common reality and a common voice that we all have in the food movement.
That was a very beautiful thing. I know, I think Therese might have chimed in. On Twitter, there was this whole community of people. Absolutely. And really, people of color talking about it as the show was airing.
Who included? I mean, who in black thought, who in just culinary, like, you know, thought was who wasn't in the film is the main thing. Like, you just, the list just kept going. The credibility of the topic is just, it gives it more cachet when you have Fred Opie and Dr. Harris and just did great. You just have all of these people that are recognizable, but are just geniuses in their topic, really giving credence to this important topic.
Yeah, I know. I don't know if you saw this, Therese, on Twitter. I had this conversation with someone. There are a lot of people who I think don't understand soul food.
Absolutely.
And black food and food ways were tweeting me saying certain things. Did you see some of that, and what are your thoughts about that, Therese?
I didn't see a conversation specifically because you would tweet. Well, I saw we started tweeting your old shows, but in terms of sort of the clarification about what real soul food is and sort of southern food ways, black food ways, and that clarification, I think is so critical right now especially as a black chef, to sort of have a distinct voice that is not necessarily all southern food ways, but is rooted in tradition and rooted in our culture, that we as black chefs are able to now feel like we can, you know, bring in our culture to the food without sort of the stereotype of the sort of, you know, milk toast version or thought about what soul food is. I mean, it's so many things.
And I'll say this, and then we're going to move on and talk about an inauguration day. I think people have to realize that this film, to me, what it was a conversation starter. I mean, there's no way in 60 minutes that you can put everything about black food, from the gardening to the chefs to the history, into 60 minutes. And speaking of food, y'all, so it's the inauguration day. Karen, you saw a little bit of the inauguration on TV, right?
Yes, definitely.
Did you see all the New York people on there? Did you see Senator Schumer?
I saw Senator Schumer there. Big ups to Brooklyn Tabernacle that sang.
Oh, my God.
Staten Island kids came in. So it was definitely New York representing.
Did you see your homegirl, Sonia Sotomayor?
Oh, my goodness.
The Bronx.
The Bronx is in the house from the Soundview Projects, people.
Okay.
See, it just goes to show what you can aspire to be. Anything you want to be.
So look, Karen, this is what they said. Now, Teresa was saying a little bit earlier. Now, the launch, which they were televising a little bit when I left home, I think this is the 60th year that they do this inaugural launch. Of course, it was being hosted by Senator Charles Schumer, who represents the great state of New York. Now, the menu, did you have a chance to look at the
yes,
menu?
I did.
So it's supposed to be New York inspired.
I mean, the man was able to procure delicious, beautiful, you know, products from the great state of New York. I mean, the government doesn't want to give Sandy aid to New York and New Jersey. Well, here's the product that your dollars are going to help, you know, rebuild wines and cheese and honey and these, which represents these small farmers who are doing amazing work and need these dollars to help rebuild.
The most obvious thing that I see on here, but that's a nod to New York City. He did a terrace. 2009 Finger Lakes Dry Riesling. And you know, Finger Lakes is basically like our wine country in New York.
Exactly.
What else did he do?
There was some honey from, I think what the main thing was where the honey came from. Like that farm had gotten like decimated or something.
Sandy.
Yeah.
Oh, you saw all that? I didn't catch all that. Did they talk about that on the news or you saw that in the article?
In the article.
Did you see that, Ken?
No, I didn't.
Okay, very interesting backstory. Someone needs to do a deep story on that inaugurational food or what have you. All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break. You have any more thoughts about the inauguration and food? Do they really eat? Have you gone? Let me ask you this, Karen, because you know you go everywhere. Mm-hmm. Have you gone to? Did you go in 2009? Did you go into the inauguration?
I went to the first inauguration, and let me tell you, I had the regular food that everybody else had because we were outside.
I know, right?
Chilling.
It was so cold.
It was so cold, but it was breathtaking. It was cold, but you didn't feel it because your emotions were so high. Just standing there in the essence of history, you didn't feel anything, but. Just sharing common elements, you know, just people being together. So that was really, really spectacular.
Even watching it on TV, I went in 2009. I will say I had to pack up like peanut butter sandwiches in a bag and all that stuff. It was brutal. Karen, I don't know what you're talking about because I was cold. but even seeing it on TV this morning, I still had like chills.
Oh, yes.
It's just a really, really beautiful and inspiring time. Congratulations to Barack Obama and his family. Very gorgeous. Very gorgeous. All right, guys, we're going to take a quick break and we're going to talk more with Miss Karen Washington and Therese Nielsen right here on Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network.
You're listening to I'm Not Gonna Cry by Sharon Jones of the Dab Kings on the Heritage Radio Network.org.
Welcome back to High Grease on Heritage Radio Network. If you're just tuning in, we're talking with Johnson & Wales Train Executive Chef Therese Nielsen and Karen Washington. Karen Washington actually was on Ebony's magazine, Power 100. Karen, congrats on that.
Thank you so much.
I have to ask you this, because I think I know this, but Karen, you're born and raised in New York City.
In the projects.
In the Bronx or Harlem?
No, Lower East Side, 10th Street and Avenue D.
Really?
All my Jacob Riis homies out there. Yes, I grew up in Jacob Riis house projects, 10th Street and Avenue D. Then I moved up to Harlem, Esplanade Gardens, 700 Lenox Peeps.
Wow.
And now I live in the boogie down, the Bronx.
So, Karen, you were doing community gardening way before it was even hot and popular.
Yeah, I've been growing food in the city for over 20 years and really have seen a jump in the food movement. Back then, you know, community gardens was just sort of like a little fantasy, sort of an idea, that a novelty sort of idea. But now it has become instrumental in this urban agricultural movement, which I'm so proud of, not only to see it happening here in New York City, but across urban areas throughout this country, and I'm very proud of that.
And not only, you know, you have an amazing story and done a lot and really are the face for us. You laugh, but I tell people all the time, if you are doing food work or you say you're doing food work in New York and you're like, do you know Karen Washington? And they have a blank face. I'm like, you're not really doing any food work, because everyone knows you, Karen.
Well, I hope that they know me for the work that I do, and is really instrumental, because I always tell people that I stand on the shoulders of greatness, that there's so many people who came before me who maybe didn't have a voice that I'm allowed to now stand up on their shoulders and give that voice and give that perspective from my culture, my tradition as a Black woman.
What a lot of people don't know about you too is you are an intellectual. Not only are you an urban farmer, but you got like a million degrees too, Karen. Aren't you a trained
a physical therapist? Yes, I've been doing that for over 36 years. I enjoy. So I would say, I tell people that I have, you know, the privilege of having a profession that I love and a passion of growing food that I'm dreaming. So I got the best of both worlds, and I thank God for that.
I know. And Therese, you have, again, I would say, I forgot to say this when I was introducing you, I would say you're an uber connector too, and a huge supporter of people.
I try to be.
Yeah, you definitely are that. And what I find so fascinating, because I don't find that many people that I know in my inner circle who have gone to the best culinary schools in the United States. What made you have a very amazing story? Very briefly, tell us about how you were gonna originally go to Temple, right?
Rutgers, actually. All through high school, I was a computer science like junkie. I went to a small magnet school, and junior year was all set to go to Rutgers. I was, with no question, I was gonna be a computer engineer. I probably was gonna work for Prudential and work in the IT department. That was gonna be my life. And then I found Edna Lewis, and I mean, you see this brown woman who looked so much like my grandmother, who was, he done everything in this industry possible and just was brilliant. I mean, I didn't know about this work as a profession. I didn't know if you could actually get trained in it, and completely changed gears. Found Johnson & Wales, because back then it was the only place offering the actual degree, and my mom was basically not trying to have me not have some piece of paper behind me one way or another.
She wanted you to get a bachelor's degree, not That's a certificate.
Right. That's right. And back then, nobody was offering actually a degree in this work, and they've all caught up now. But yeah, back then Johnson Wales was the option, and I went. And during that time, just kind of felt like, yeah, as a brown person in this work, I'm in these classes with all of these non-brown faces. How do I sort of connect to people who look like me, and the reasons that I wanted to do this work? And after school and work and everything, I just kind of felt like there's no connectivity. Like, there are few organizations that are really supposed to be doing, you know, work in terms of diversity, but there really weren't. So I started my blog because I felt like there have to be more people out there like me. Have to be more people who do this work 80 hours a week and love it, but want to connect to the soulful reasons that you chose it in the beginning. Like, money and, you know, being on Food Network is not going to sustain you when your feet and back hurt and, you know, you haven't seen your family for 4 holidays. So
you spoke of being a brown person and the lack of brown people. You know, it's MLK Day, mm-hmm. you know. A lot of people are posting quotes and they're putting his photos up and channeling his energy. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of things that we face in terms of I'm saying people that are food professionals. Mm-hmm. How do you handle, you know, racism and inequality in the food world? And have you seen a shift from when you started in Johnson & Wales up into now as a professional? I mean, you're an entrepreneur, mm-hmm. and an executive chef.
Right. I mean, I think racism in our industry is very subtle, especially because this industry in general, in terms of the food side, or the professional cooking side, is very it's result based. If you can cook, you can cook. So no, I'm not going to be called the name directly, but yeah, they're going to put a brown girl in pastry or on Garmage Day as opposed to working grill. Like, you know, I'm never going to be the executive chef of a big hotel, but the option that most Black people have in any industry, irrespective, you know, is ownership. Like, no, you don't have to work within somebody else's system. What you can do is take your skill set and create your own area, or demand your own area in this industry. So that's what I did. That's what a lot of people I know are doing. And I mean, it's very satisfying. It's just that you have to, you know, play within their system to learn the rules and then kind of bust out and do your own thing.
Yeah, it's very complex. I mean, after having so many conversations with you, it is a very complex world, this culinary world, mm-hmm. particularly if you're a person of color.
absolutely. And then a woman of color, like, it's just, it's one of those things, like, you know, I couldn't imagine being a black man in this work, like, to the indignity that you have to sort of endure just by virtue of your color. It's a lot easier for me. I mean, nobody's going to directly talk to me, especially in, like, I worked in hotels mostly, so I mean, you have human resources, nobody's going to talk to you crazy. But if I worked in a small restaurant, like, I couldn't imagine what would go on.
Wow. And Karen, you know, I have to ask you this question. There's been a lot of you know, talk around a recent incident, and I think a lot of people who are black in New York City received this open letter that you wrote, and I know I had chills running all through my body when I read this letter, and I'm sure people are listening to it now. What are your thoughts about, you know, as a person with power, because you hold a lot of power, you know, making a stand, and what does that mean, particularly when you're doing food activism work and you have the you're holding the microphone, as I say, meaning you have the ability to say words that can change situations and inspire.
Well, I just want to make sure that in this food movement, that when it comes to the perspective of the black movement, that the black voices are being heard. I think too many times our voices are told to, you know, tone it down, mm-hmm. you know, don't step on feet, you know, don't stir the pot, so to speak. You know, the funders are watching, and I think that we need to really represent our voices and our intention in this food movement. You talked about racism. I think there definitely is racism in the food movement. As long as there's hunger, there's racism there. If you look at what the element of hunger does and who are the hungry people, it's definitely racist in our society, and racism in our food system. So then how do we get past that? We get past that by providing opportunities for people to have jobs. That means jobs that are living wage jobs, to people to have self-expression, to people who are entrepreneurs to have businesses, to have money, to have wealth. So there's a lot of structural racism that's in place that's preventing people of color to really go at it from a positive, from an economical point of view. And I think that as long as we don't talk about racism that is happening in our food system and the work that we do, then silence is deadly. And so I'm not going to be silent.
That's right.
And Karen, I have to say this. The most powerful part of that open letter, you said, and I'm not quoting here, I'm just summarizing. You said, when I first started out doing food work, people said I was loud, I was too black, you said something. And that part resonated with me, because I have been in situations where, just because, I'm just going to be honest, sometimes when people of color and black people walk into the room and we are very confident, it offends people. And you spoke that in your letter. What advice do you have for the young Therese Nielsen who's going to culinary school, or a person like myself, or a young person that's 20 years old that's trying to be a community activist, that's loud and they speak truth to power? What advice could you give them?
We came from kings and queens. Always have that in the back of your mind. Who did you come from? We came from kings and queens. This is a special that we're here talking today on Martin Luther King, who was one of the greatest orators of our time. Mm-hmm. Him along with Malcolm X. The greatness of speech, the greatness of the ability to transcend race, color, creed, economics based on words. People, knowledge is power. Use your blackness, the gift that you've got from our ancestors, to move this movement forward. Be powerful in what you say. Knowledge is power, and speak the truth. The truth will set you free.
There you have it. There you have it. That was like, oh, you channel MLK and Obama then. That's it. We're going to take a short break. I'm going to have to get some water because, oh, I'm serious. I really felt something with
that. Oh, my God.
We're going to take a short break, people. We're going to come back with more Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network. Historic day with two historic women right here in the studio.
You're listening to How Long Do I Have to Wait for You by Sharon Jones and the Dab Kings on the Heritage Radio Network.org.
following program has been brought to you by Tabard Inn. Tabard Inn, Washington, D.C.'s quintessential small hotel, is located on a quiet, tree-lined street just 5 blocks from the White House. Vibrant yet unassuming, the Tabard is comprised of 40 sleeping rooms, each unique in character and design. Feast on eclectic American cuisine in their acclaimed restaurant, or enjoy a cocktail and listen to live jazz in one of their cozy Victorian seating areas. Mingle with travelers from around the world who find the Tabard the only place to stay when taking their travels to Washington. For more information, visit tabardinn.com.
Welcome back to Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network. Remember, you can check out all of my show archives on heritageradionetwork.org or iTunes or Stitcher. If you're just tuning in live in the studio in the flesh, we have Karen Washington and Cerise Nelson. We're talking all things food, MLK, inspiration, President Barack Obama's inauguration right here in the studio. It's powerful. Mm-hmm. You can really truly feel the energy. So, Therese, I have to ask you, because we didn't really even talk about, you know, you're an executive chef at a company that's...
We're a tiny boutique brand based out of Harlem. Started probably, we're 7 years.
Oh, wow.
Old now. But we sort of focused on teaching women how to live well, live life deliciously is our sort of tagline. But my title has changed over the years. I think I'm more culinary director now. But we run a website, getemgirls.com, which is sort of all things amazing. You know, somebody that you need to follow, some artist is coming out this brilliant, this, you know, delicious. We do a series called What to Eat This Week, like what's so local and seasonal and delicious right now. Just if you're an urban woman, you know, wanting to connect to great, you know, products or whatever, we just kind of put it out there.
And in addition to that, you know, founded Black Culinary History. Mm-hmm. And I would say, I mean, the biggest thing I see you doing on there is connecting people. That is your, you know, connecting different people. Like, you're going to leave here today and watch and see, she's going to connect you to about 5 people, Karen.
I mean, because I think that was one of the things I felt. And when I left a full-time job, like working with someone else in 08, and it was like right before the downturn in the economy. It was just like this scary time. Like, I made this choice to, like, you know, be an entrepreneur full time and like go out on a limb and go out on faith, and then the economy just sort of exposed. Like, oh my God, you know, this sort of moment where I had this one second of doubt. And the thing I felt was lacking for me was inspiration. Like, I was, you know, in this very critical mental space where it's like about to, you know, panic. But then I remembered that there are so many people out there that I could talk to, and, you know, so many chefs and just inspirational folks who are doing cool work and doing really brilliant things that I should be able to draw from. So I just wrote this manifesto, this open letter, like you did, to about 40 people. And through those 40 people, the degrees of separation grew this network. I think our Facebook group is a little over 800 now. The website gets, I want to say, 1,000 views a day. Like, it's just, it's one of those things. Like, it started out as this personal, selfish project. But I thought about, you know, all of the chefs out there, brown chefs who don't have time to be online all the time. I want to be able to go to one place and be able to read a cool article, or go to, you know, find out the source I should be going to for, you know, cool radio shows. Like, this show, I wanted it to be a place where you kind of feel connected, even if you didn't have time.
Speaking of connectivity, Karen, you always have some projects and things you're working on, but I think you have one big baby that you're continuing, not even the birth, because that thing's been, you birthed that already.
Yeah, definitely. So we're going to do an event February 16th, really raising the consciousness of our voices in this food movement. Just stay tuned. Hopefully it's going to be at The Point, which is located in the Bronx, but we'll give people more information as time goes by. But the biggie, and a lot of people like Nicole and Therese will be involved, is the Black Farmers and Urban Gardeners Conference that we plan on having again this year. We've been asked to have it. This is the right time to have it. Mm-hmm. This is going to be a breakout year for so many people, young and old, to really, as a source of self-expression, and to really move forward in this movement. The time is right. It's critical. The iron is hot. I'm here at Hot Grease. So it's time.
There you have it. We're going to take a quick break. And come back, and we're going to just do some general reflections about President Obama and MLK Day. I think a few people have commented on Facebook and Twitter about what they're doing today. So listeners, keep tuning in. We'll be back with more Karen and Therese.
This one's called Make It Good to Me on the heritageradionetwork.org. You're listening to Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings.
Welcome back to Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network. Our show was engineered, or is being engineered, by Joe G. Let me give a Southern Girls hug to Roberta's Restaurant. It's off and popping. It's crowded here at Roberta's. Roberta's is located at 261 Moore Street in Brooklyn, New York, and the location of two sustainable shipping containers known as Heritage Radio Network. Historic day, y'all. Mm-hmm. Historic day. I'm honored to have y'all in the studio. And now, you know, sometimes you have to kind of reflect back. Like, next year we'll be like, well, what did I do on Inauguration Day? This will be ingrained in your memory, yes, being here on the network. Do you have any final thoughts or reflections about having President Barack Obama in his second term? And then just thinking how it's really not ironic. It's all by chance that MLK's birthday, not his birthday, but the holiday, actually fell on an inauguration.
Well, I remember the first time, I mean, when it was 4 years ago, when we were just getting the inkling that he might run. Here was this senator, Barack Obama, who, you know, like Barack Obama, who ever heard of this person? And to live a dream that Dr. Martin Luther King always said, you know, he may not get there with us, but he has seen the promised land, and we'll get to the promised land. And to have that come through, when so many times growing up, you know, around the table, we were thinking, who's going to be the, you know, the first black president, who's going to be the first black president? And then when he was elected, just to sit back and then sort of this sort of release, first of all, of happiness and jubilation, but then also a sadness that so many of my parents, yeah, and relatives who wanted to see this day couldn't see it. They're up in heaven seeing it. And so now to have a second chance of another 4 years to be in the realm of history, I'm taking each day as it comes, and I'm cherishing these next 4 years of him being president. And I think that what it does, especially on a day like today, is really realizing the dream that we can be whoever we want to be. And if it's in our path of greatness, and we have people behind us to support us with greatness, we can achieve as a people. And black people, today is a day of reflection for all of us to look at the positive things that we as a people have done to move ahead. And so as we move forward collectively, let's work together so that we have more Malcolms and more Martins and more Barack Obamas that are now looking towards us as leadership to move them towards the future.
Love it. Therese, do you have any reflections?
I just thought I loved his inaugural speech. It made me think, because you were talking about how everybody on Facebook over the last couple of days since his birthday to now, Dr. King has been like posting videos and quotes and all that, and just how reminiscent the president's speech was of like the last year, I think, of Dr. King's life. It was just a lot more policy driven. Like, you know, this is real serious times right now, and like we need to get down to work. And I got that feeling from the inauguration speech. It was like, okay, 4 years, you know, we did some things, but you know, it's about to, you know, 4 years, yes, more, it's time to get to work, like to get to serious work.
Yes. Ladies, thank you so much for coming on Hot Grease. I'm really honored. I'm happy to be able to share this day with you guys, and glad you guys came in the studio. Thank you so much, Karen. I know you'll be back on.
And thank you. I want to say to our listeners, thank you, Nicole Taylor, mm-hmm, for always being that inspiration, always being at the forefront of allowing people of color to have a voice in this movement. And my hat goes off. I know so many of your listeners really applaud the work that you do, and yes. keep on pushing, girlfriend.
Thank you. I feel just like you said earlier. I mean, I'm standing on the shoulders of so many people, you know, MLK, Barack Obama, you know, people in my own family and people whose name we don't even know. So I realize that it is a privilege for me to even live in New York City and to be right here in this room in Brooklyn hosting Hot Grease. Listeners, thank you so much for tuning in to Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network. Have a fabulous Dr. Martin Luther King Day 2013 and Inauguration Day. Remember, you can join me here every Monday at 3:30 Eastern Time. But until then, always take the road less traveled.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.